Support for Petri Dish is made possible by UT Health San Antonio, committed to transforming the health of the community through the team that tackles problems from every angle, doing everything it takes to bring each patient the best possible outcomes. From teaching tomorrow's healthcare leaders to translating research into new treatments, UT Health San Antonio strives to make lives better. Learn more at groundbreakingresearch.org.
I like to party, man. I like to go dancing. I like to be with people. That's what I'm like.
Meet Jeffrey Barlev.
I am retired. I am 76 years old. I live in Crossville, Tennessee, which is the golf capital of Tennessee.
He doesn't golf, but he is quite active, which has kept him in pretty good health for someone his age.
I have age-related arthritis. I have slightly elevated blood pressure. I have an AFib that comes and goes. And I have back issues.
Still, at 76, he's automatically at the highest risk for severe disease and even death were he to be infected with COVID-19. So how has he managed this risk?
I got accustomed to being alone, to not going to out to eat often, or not going to clubs and not going dancing. I got used to it. That's what people, that's what humans are like. They're extremely resilient, and we as humans can get used to anything. I created half my living room. I turned into a gym. So I worked out a lot. And that's what kept me sane, was working out.
He shopped during off hours. If he was around other people, he often wore a mask. He kept his distance. As he puts it, he dodged people.
I mostly ate at home until I got sick of my own cooking, which isn't all that great. So if I ate in a restaurant, I would tell the host or hostess that I want to be as far away from humanity as possible, and they usually obliged me. As for everything else, I had all the shots and the boosters, and I took my vitamins and zinc every day. And I just didn't get it.
Jeffrey didn't get COVID, ever.
Almost everybody that I know has had it at least once. It's mostly rural. And I suppose I was lucky here because a lot of people had COVID here. A lot of people died because there was lots of anti-vaxxers here. Lots of people that didn't like wearing masks. There were people who had light cases of it, and they would say, well, it's nothing, it's like the flu. To me, if I have the flu, I am convinced that any second I will die, you know? But to many of these people that I knew, that I spoke to, they kind of poo-pooed it. I thought that it was very serious.
Since the vaccines, he's a little more relaxed with his restrictions. He takes things on a case-by-case basis.
I just go with my guts. I have masks in the car. If I have to go grocery shopping, if it's very crowded, sometimes I put it on and sometimes I don't. When I don't have it on, as I mentioned before, I dodge people. I know exactly where I want and which part of the store that product is at. So I just go, I get what I want to leave. If I go early in the morning or at night, I take my time, but otherwise I don't.
Now, since COVID lingers in the air, dodging people isn't going to be all that protective if a space is not well ventilated. Still, Jeffrey hasn't gotten COVID. Does he think he's immune?
Am I immune? I might be slightly immune because I have read some research that people with type O blood don't get it as easily, but people with type A blood really get it easily. And I'm a type O.
I'm also type O and have been following the research that did suggest early on that people with type O blood have a lower risk of COVID infection. I've had it twice, both reasonably mild cases. So while being type O may offer some protection, it's not immunity. Being so safe has been difficult for a social guy like Jeffrey, who likes to go dancing. But he's still here. He's alive to dance in the future, and that eases the very real sense of loss he feels.
I wouldn't do anything differently because I didn't get it, so I don't have any reason to do anything differently. I just hope that it doesn't happen again with anything else, because it really cuts into a person's life a long way. It really cuts deep. You isolate them all. You don't socialize as much. It's just a difficult, lonely existence.
But if he knew why he didn't get it, was it his choices, the vaccines? Was it his genes? If he knew, maybe he could make different choices and still be safe. Could knowing why offer all of us opportunities to protect ourselves in ways that don't involve lockdowns and loneliness? Could it offer protection to people who could never stay home and those who are more vulnerable for all kinds of reasons? So why is Jeffrey a novid, someone who's never had COVID? And is he really, or is there something else going on? From Texas Public Radio, this is Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petrie.
City Pulse, what Toronto's talking about tonight.
Good evening. A spike in the SARS case numbers tonight and more than 7,000 in quarantine.
But the SARS fighters say...
In early 2003, the world was on edge watching a novel coronavirus race across the globe from China to North America, specifically Toronto, Ontario.
Health officials say that they have issued two orders so far, ordering people to stay in quarantine. They aren't kidding. You've got to stay home until Tuesday anyway. That means home in the house. It's tough, but you got to do it.
Dr. Jan Patterson is a professor of medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases at UT Health San Antonio. And in early February 2020, she told me about her time volunteering to help out in a Toronto hospital during the SARS outbreak there.
And in fact, the healthcare workers were on what is called work-home quarantine. So they only go to work and then they come home. They weren't supposed to go to the grocery store, to church, or social events, or anything like that.
Or other hospitals, no matter the circumstances, not even if a family member was dying.
I remember one of the nurses told her father goodbye on the phone because she had worked in a SARS-affected hospital. She couldn't go to the hospital where he was, you know, to visit him. So it was a very somber time.
The SARS death toll here is still at 29. 753 people are dead worldwide, mostly in Asia. And officials still haven't confirmed a few possible exported cases, people who had been in Toronto apparently but are sick back in the U.S.
This interview, before our own coronavirus was yet out of control, seemed like a warning about possible worst-case scenarios. But now it seems almost quaint. In the 4 years since I did that interview with Dr. Patterson, we all have learned more than we ever wanted to know about coronaviruses, quarantines, and death. SARS-CoV-2 has been our constant companion, and Dr. Patterson has been busy. She co-wrote a book. She continues to work as a professor and infectious diseases doctor at UT Health San Antonio. And she is a co-investigator on the San Antonio site for the RECOVER Initiative, a National Institutes of Health study with a mission of understanding, treating, and preventing long COVID. Now, to understand long COVID, you need to study novids.
So a novid is simply someone who has not had COVID. And, we're including them in the RECOVER long COVID study. And the reason for that is so they're basically a control group. So we're able to compare the group with long COVID symptoms to the group that has not had COVID. And the reason for that is, first of all, to look at the differences. You know, they get some baseline labs, just like the long COVID patients do. And also, it's also of interest to see what happens if they do get COVID, because, of course, there are still COVID cases occurring. And so since these NOVID case people are in the cohort, it's an opportunity to look at what happens, you know, when they get COVID over the course of time.
Can you tell if a person has never had COVID?
Yes, there are antibody tests now. You know, initially it was hard to tell because we didn't have the tests, but now there are antibody tests that are that let us know whether it's antibody from the vaccine, and that basically is antibody to the spike protein because that's what the vaccine is made of, or whether it's antibody to the natural infection. And that's antibody to some, they're nonspecific proteins, they're called N proteins. And so it's an N antibody. So basically we can tell whether somebody has one or the other or both. Sometimes people have both.
When you find a NOVID, what do you think has protected them all this time from a disease that has made many people sick over and over and over again, and sometimes has made people sick just once, but that was enough to land them in your study fighting the fallout, long COVID?
Okay. So, well, of course, somebody who hasn't had it at all, that would usually be somebody who's had less exposure, you know? So, I mean, somebody who's not out and not public facing, who doesn't have young children, you know, because young children, you know, tend to pass things around and they're often in little groups with other young children. The true NOVIDs who never have it, it's more of an epidemiologic exposure thing. So they don't have as much exposure to getting sick. Now, the people who get it, who may have little to no symptoms, those tend to be people who don't have the big risk factors for severe disease. And that is, you know, immunosuppressed, older people, certainly over 65 and over 80, who have high inflammatory conditions. And obesity is one of those. And we learned that, you know, obesity was a big risk factor in the pandemic. And so those are kind of the main things that we look for in people that are at high risk, you know, immunosuppression, older age, and inflammatory conditions.
I asked Dr. Patterson about someone like Jeffrey Barlev, who was careful but has also used dodging people as an approach to avoiding infection and is approaching 80 and is high risk.
Now, you know, the other thing that makes a difference is that early on, the strains that we had early on, you know, like the alpha strains and the what's called the wild type strains, although they're not really wild type because they changed from China to here, but they were more virulent. And people got sicker with those. Whereas, you know, the Omicrons and beyond, the Omicron and the newer renditions, while they are more transmissible, they appear to be less virulent and, in fact, have turned out to be less virulent. So, you know, some people that might have gotten sicker with the initial strains when they have, you know, the newer strains that have evolved to be more transmissible but happen to be less virulent because of that change, they don't get as sick.
I think that may be the key for people like Jeffrey. He was very careful during the early part of the pandemic and then got his vaccines and the milder variants, relatively speaking, came along. But what about that other option? People who think they're NOVIDs, but they're not.
There's true NOVIDs, and then there's subclinical NOVIDs. And what I mean by that is there's people that have had it that have had either no symptoms or very few symptoms.
Jeffrey mentioned his workout routine that kept him sane and might have helped keep him healthy. He mentioned his focus on nutrition. Patterson says neither of those things will protect you from infection.
But if you do get it, I think you're more likely to have a healthy immune response, which in most cases is going to mean that, you know, you're going to have little to no symptoms. And again, I think that's even more relevant with these strains that we have these days that are less virulent. You know, with the earlier strains that were more virulent, I think that was less of a factor, honestly. But given the fact that, you know, obese people were much more at risk, and considering that an inflammatory syndrome, you know, people who eat healthier diets were, you know, less likely, had less risk.
Okay, inflammation. I want to drill down on that for a second because we hear a lot about it, right? And we may have a vague idea about what it is, but how does inflammation work exactly?
Well, so inflammation means that, you know, we were talking before about these inflammatory cytokines. So it can mean that you have a release of those agents and they're releasing and attracting inflammatory cells, which by and large are white blood cells, and causing an inflammatory response. And by that, we mean that you're attracting white blood cells and secreting things in the body, even hormones and other things that activate your body to respond to stress. You know, for instance, cortisol, that's our body's own natural steroid.
Acute inflammation in response to an injury or infection is caused by the immune system rushing to deal with an invader and repair the damage it caused. These are the good guys. We need that inflammation. But chronic inflammation is the good guys gone rogue, and it does real damage.
Yes. And, you know, if you think about the leading causes of death, for instance, heart disease, you know, we think of cardiovascular disease now as inflammatory. Certainly we know that obesity is inflammatory. And there's many types of cancer that are related to obesity. And of course, many autoimmune diseases that has to do with inflammation, you know, having an autoimmune response in our own body. So yeah, there's a lot of inflammation that we have to deal with in diseases that are common these days.
An anti-inflammatory way of eating can help cut chronic inflammation, and it's also good for those little guys who live in your gut.
Yeah, so the microbiome, of course, as you know, if you're interested in this, has been now related to all these different diseases, you know, to immune response, to depression, to obesity.
Parkinson's, Alzheimer's.
I mean, you know, the way I think about it is that, you know, you get a healthy microbiome from eating a healthy diet. And if you're eating plants, basically, if you're eating fruits and vegetables and fiber and lean meats, you're eating things that are healthy for healthy bacteria. And so if you're eating those things like a plant-based diet, I mean, and that plant-based, I don't mean no meat, but I mean like you're eating a lot of plants. That's good for your microbiome, and it helps you maintain a healthy microbiome. So that is good for you. That's good. That helps you with anything, protection against any of these diseases. I'm not going to say it's curative, certainly, because there's a lot we need to learn about it. But certainly it helps if you have a healthy microbiome.
So it's clear that some Novids are cautious. They've been COVID smart and it's paid off. They've avoided infection and all the complications associated with infection. Others may not be true Novids, but their immune systems behaved in a textbook manner and the virus didn't bother them much. There is a certain amount of privilege to being that type of Novid during this pandemic. There are people who could never be cautious. Remember the farm workers, the meat packers, and the healthcare workers who could not choose to work from home and in many cases had inadequate or no protections. Even now, there are bus drivers and bartenders and people who work in poorly ventilated schools or offices that actively discourage caution who cannot protect themselves. And there are families who couldn't begin to afford the kind of whole foods diet that discourages chronic inflammation, who are stuck with affordable ultra-processed foods. But are there Novids who've been protected in some way by their genes?
And so you can kind of think of this situation as analogous to vaccination. So instead of having had these people in some ways were vaccinated against COVID by virtue of having, you know, had a common cold virus earlier in their lives.
Could this knowledge help scientists help vulnerable people? We'll dive into that when Petri Dish continues.
Support for Petri Dish comes from Mama's Cafe, serving elevated comfort food, craft cocktails, and Texas beers on tap, 7 days a week. More information at mamascafesa.com.
Welcome back to Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri.
All right, so please give me your full name and title and tell me a little bit about what you do.
Jill Hollenbach, professor in Department of Neurology and Department of Epidemiology and Biostatistics at UCSF. Mostly what I do is I run a research lab that's dedicated to understanding how variation, genetic variation of genes that encode immune receptors impacts health and disease. I have a longstanding focus on the genes called HLA, which stands for human leukocyte antigen. And just to provide some context, these are the genes that we match when we talk about matching for transplants. And so that kind of gives you an idea of how different they are from person to person.
HLA genes are an intriguing target for study in this case because they are kind of watchdogs in our immune systems. They sit on the surface of our cells, and when a virus invades, they snatch up a piece of it and hold it up so our T cells can get a good look at that piece. The HLA gene says, "Hey, T cells, you recognize this guy? Is this something that's done us harm in the past?" And if the T cells recognize the piece of virus as a bad guy, they go after it. They hunt it down and kill it.
And what we found was that folks who have this one particular version of an HLA, so it's a little complicated to explain how we name these genes and the versions of the genes, but we found that people who had HLA-B1501 were more than twice as likely to remain asymptomatic after being infected than those who did not.
No symptoms at all.
No, none at all. We were really stringent in how we, you know, selected people. And so we only included people that had no symptoms whatsoever. Like, they would not have known that they had COVID if they didn't test.
So they were infected, but they were fine.
After we found this genetic association, which then you always want to look and see if you can find that in another group of people, kind of replicate that finding. We did replicate that finding a couple of times, so we felt really pretty sure about the actual genetic association. Then we asked the question, in people who have HLA-B15, is there something about their T cells, which are kind of, the job of HLA is to show pieces of the pathogen to T cells, which are these effector cells whose job it is to go around and kill infected cells in your body. And that's a very specific relationship.
That specific HLA variant and that specific piece of the novel coronavirus that none of our T cells had ever seen before, what was it about them that made T cells get out their guns?
We looked at samples that were collected long before the pandemic. Some of them were collected decades ago. And we just asked that question, can we see T cells in these people who've never seen the virus that nevertheless will respond to the virus? And the answer was yes. And in fact, they were very effective T cells. They were largely what we call the memory type T cells. So those are very long lasting cells that are in your body for, you know, years or even decades. They're kind of like an army in the waiting. You know, they're waiting to see the specific combination of HLA and pathogen that they are looking for. And then they can kind of activate and go to town. Now, of course, SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID, is a coronavirus. And we deal with coronaviruses. We have all of us all our lives. They're common coronaviruses that cause the common cold, so that almost all of us have been infected at one point or another. And what we found was that there was this piece of the COVID virus that was very similar to almost exactly the same. It only differed by a single amino acid, one building block of a protein from a piece of protein from two very common cold viruses. And so what we think is that in these folks, that they happen to have seen something that looks very similar.
They, at some point, had a regular cold caused by a coronavirus.
We know that there is a lot of similarity between parts of the SARS-CoV-2 virus and common cold coronaviruses. But what we think is going on in this case is that it's just a very kind of happy accident that the way this piece looks when it's being held up to the T cells by B15 is just really similar to how the common cold virus looks. And so these folks just fortunately have ready and willing T cells that saw common cold viruses, you know, at some point in their lifetimes, that happen to be super reactive to the virus that causes COVID. And so, you know, what we think is that very early in infection, these T cells get woken up, fired up, become activated, and clear the infection before the person ever experiences any symptoms. That's the hypothesis.
So in these lucky people, their T cells just killed the COVID virus before the person even had a little cough, because they thought they were seeing an old coronavirus they knew from the past.
It's kind of the same idea around vaccination, right? So the whole point of getting vaccinated is that you give your immune system a preview of something that you want it to be responsive to. And so it gives you an opportunity for you to form an immune response in these memory cells.
So these HLA-B 1501 mutants are another group of people who are not true novids.
There's probably lots of people out there that think that they've never had the virus, never been infected with the virus, but actually just didn't have symptoms, which is fine, which is great.
Because the problem with COVID is the symptoms, right? It's the respiratory distress and the blood clots and the pneumonia and, in millions of cases, the death. If you don't have any symptoms at all, the infection is no problem. Wait, that's not exactly true. Another problem with COVID is how contagious it is, and asymptomatic people going around infecting people has been a really big problem during this pandemic. But Dr. Hollenbeck says, at least with this particular variant, the person isn't infected for very long because the T cells get busy killing it quickly. Meantime, the search for genes that prevent infection in the first place, genes that create true novids, is ongoing.
There's never been like any, you know, huge smoking gun, but a lot of, you know, pretty convincing hits. It's one of these things that is like most disease, even if there's a genetic basis for it, is what we think of as polygenic and complex, meaning many, many genes with smaller effect sizes that all kind of together contribute to somebody's susceptibility. And so it's kind of like that. So you're really looking for a lot of different needles in a haystack.
Researchers all over the world are looking for those needles, but they are as difficult to find as it sounds.
How do you actually do the study? How do you decide who didn't get infected? Even if you have a whole bunch of people that didn't get infected, right? How do you know that they were exposed equivalently to the people who did get infected? And how do you know that they won't get infected sometime in the future? And so it's kind of a really, really difficult thing to show.
But they're trying. Even Hollenbeck and her team are trying.
The entire field of HLA is kind of built on the idea that having different susceptibilities to infection is what's driving all that genetic variation. It's just that doing the actual scientific studies is really, really hard in humans.
But why? what do we even do with this information at all at this point? How does it help now to know if someone is truly genetically immune to this specific virus? It doesn't mean they'll be immune to the next one.
From our study, I would say the big takeaway is not about, oh, people should get tested for this gene and somehow change their behaviors or have a different risk assessment or a different expectation of what their experience is going to be, but the fact that it gave us a real insight into what are the immunological conditions that lend themselves to people remaining asymptomatic and gives us an idea about, well, maybe we want to consider engineering the next generation of vaccines around the goal of people remaining asymptomatic rather than maybe not becoming infected at all. Because that seems to me a much more tractable goal. So yeah, you may get infected because we know that the neutralizing antibodies wane, but we've engineered a vaccine that's giving you these revved up, ready to go, super duper T cells that will make sure that you actually don't become ill, which I've had COVID only once. I mean, I wasn't horribly sick, but I could have lived without it, you know? Like, if I had not had any symptoms, that would have been great.
And the next viral pandemic is out there. We're watching H5N1 and Mpox right now. And there's fungi. We did a show last year on Candida auris and bacteria. We did two shows on tuberculosis. We may not yet know what the next big bad may be, but we can continue learning about our weapons against it.
The important thing is to keep in place funding for research, to keep a focus on paying attention to these places where we can expect a spillover from animals, and, you know, continue with the level of preparedness that I think that we had to kind of develop in real time during the pandemic.
And with all we've learned about our immune systems, we still don't know nearly enough.
No, not at all. And even immunologists, you know, I mean, immunology is so hard, actually, and confusing. And, you know, I think that we're all figuring it out every single day. Yeah, I mean, of course, I'm biased, but it's hard for me to imagine it ever not being important. I hope that the general public can understand between all the discourse how important this kind of work really is.
The human immune system is a really giant puzzle cut into very tiny pieces, and scientists like Hollenbeck are slowly putting it together.
Which is how it works, right? It's science is incremental, so we just chip away at problems every day.
Oh, thank you to Novid, Jeffrey Barlev, Dr. Jan Patterson, and Dr. Jill Hollenbeck. This episode of Petri Dish was produced by TPR Vice President Dan Katz, Jacob Rosati, and me. I wrote the show, and Jacob Rosati composed all the music and created the sound design. Petri Dish is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Petri. Talk to you soon.